Greetings, fellow nerds and geeks. Why don't you pull yourself up a chair, grab yourself a beverage, and prepare to enjoy a geek-tastic conversation. Welcome to the Geekeasy.
Welcome back to another installment of the Geekeasy podcast. I am Pixel Dan.
I'm Jonathan Leonard.
Hey, what's going on, Jonathan?
What is this, like three or four in a row?
We're doing pretty good.
Yeah.
We are on a roll.
Couple days late on this one, but nothing special.
No, it's not too bad, and it's actually going to be online like pretty quick after us recording it, so people probably won't even really notice. Plus, I posted the last one a little bit later than I thought because of the whole Toy Fair thing.
Yeah, so. They'll notice. I just told them.
Well, that's true. Well, they'll notice when you told them. They were probably like, hey, new podcast. I didn't even notice too late until Jonathan said something.
We should edit this.
Edit? I didn't know there was editing involved in this whole podcast.
You're my tech guy.
That's extra work. So, how's it been going, man? I was gone for a while.
Yeah, you were.
I was gone for a while.
You do that around this time of year. You just disappear for
I know. Where do I go?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
I show up to your house. It's dark. No one answers the door. I get scared.
Where are you, Dan? We have things to discuss on a microphone.
Podcast!
Yeah, I was gone for a while, and then all kinds of things happened. So we have many things to discuss today.
Yeah, we do.
We'll go ahead and start, I guess, with the Toy Fair stuff, since it's kind of been about, gosh, it's already been like almost 2 weeks since Toy Fair ended, so we've pretty much exhausted, I think, most of the big news and everything coming from Toy Fair.
Yeah, I think you walked off the microphone from our last episode and onto a plane, didn't you?
Pretty much. That's pretty much how it went.
Did you have any flying adventures earlier in the year?
They weren't. This time, the flying adventures weren't funny. They were just frustrating. Probably a good 7 hours before I was supposed to get on my flight, they canceled my flight on me. I was supposed to leave from here in Springfield. We were going to fly out at like 6 a.m. And at like 9 o'clock the night before, I got the notification that they had canceled the flight.
Oh, that sounds fun.
Yeah. So I'm scrambling trying to figure out what's going on, if they're going to rebook me, what's happening. And it turns out that they just straight canceled the flight because they had no crew. They had no crew. That was their excuse. Flight canceled due to no crew.
So, like, and the whole plane just didn't show up?
I guess. Like I have no idea. I guess they just...
Like, nine guys sleeping
maybe,
at once?
Maybe, yeah. And this was, like, you know, hours before the flight. I don't know. I assume maybe the crew that was supposed to fly it got delayed and stuck somewhere else in another city and weren't going to make
it here.
There's
been a lot of weird weather and stuff,
so. I had to call. I hate doing this too, because then you have to call the customer service number at the airline and it's not here in the United States, so you have to talk to, you know, Peggy. And Peggy has to try to understand what you're saying, and you have to try to understand what Peggy's saying. But I get on the phone, I'm trying to figure out what's going on, and the next available flight was the following day at 8 p.m. And
that
was like,
gravy.
I was like, that is not going to work.
Yeah, that's unacceptable.
Like, that is unacceptable. Yeah. So I ended up having to reroute my flight to St. Louis, which means as soon as I got it all booked, I had to hang up the phone, pile into the car, and drive to St. Louis in the middle of the night because we wanted to make sure we were there in time to catch our flight, which was at like 5:30 in the morning.
Yep.
So that just was like this complete and utter nightmare. Didn't want to have to deal with that. It was a terrible way to start the trip. And the thing that was really stupid about it is my flight coming home still brought me home to Springfield. So I ended up driving my car to St. Louis, parking in St. Louis, then flying home to Springfield, which means the day after I got back, which was the day I was wanting to kind of relax and you know, get my bearings back and settle back at home and hang out with my kid, I had to drive to St. Louis to get my car and bring it back home.
And there's nothing, I'm not a flying expert, there's nothing like, I thought when they did that stuff, it was on them responsibility-wise to cover you for the flights and the inconvenience of getting back home and stuff like that.
I think the only thing they did for me was not charge me any extra or anything, whatever, to like adjust my flights. And they gave us like good seats on the plane. That's all they did for us.
Yeah, man. See, this is one of the many reasons I don't fly many places.
Flying sucks. Yeah. It's just so bad.
I would just have an ulcer.
It's just
from freaking out.
It's a pain because you have to fly to get to places.
Yeah, absolutely.
You can't drive everywhere because it just, it can't happen. You have to fly. So you rely on these airlines, and they're just like, eh, whatever. We're going to do what we want because you have to rely on us.
Yep.
It's just, it's the worst. So, yeah, not near as fun this time as it was last time when I had a funny story to tell. This time it was just straight up frustrating. It was awful.
Yeah, I'm kind of bummed out now.
This is the second time I've had a stupid issue flying out of Springfield. Like, I do not have a good track record flying out of our home city.
I don't think our airport has that much of a great track record.
Yeah, it's not been good so far.
But like you said last show, it's so tiny.
It is. Oh, yeah. It's so tiny. Tiny little thing. And they probably only had that one flight flying out that day, and there was no crew, so they're like, shut down the airport. We got nothing to do. So it was like, awesome. Thanks, guys. So, yeah, but I made it out there, so everything was fine. I ended up, like, even though I had to stay up all night and drive to St. Louis and didn't get any sleep, which was awful, but we still made it into New York City only about 2 hours later than I initially was supposed to anyway. Didn't really lose any time. Wasn't doing anything Toy Fair related that day anyway. I just wanted that day to, like, get there, settle into my hotel, get up, all my stuff set up and ready to go the next day. That way I could just go to sleep, get a good night's sleep, and wake up ready to go the next day. So it was fine once I got there and got going. But, man, that is just the craziest time of the year for me. Toy Fair is just non-stop, go, like, I all day. It was started on Saturday, which is a day earlier this year than it normally starts, so all day Saturday, Sunday, and Monday I was at the center at 7 a.m and was booked solid with appointments all the way until about 5 or 6 p.m every day. Like, I just literally was going from one toy company to the next all day, every day, just filming interviews and product walkthroughs and getting back to the hotel and doing my best to edit stuff. It was just crazy. Like, it's nuts. But I enjoy doing it, and I feel really good about this year's coverage. I came back with 63 videos is what I totaled out with, which is the most I've ever done, and every single video is an actual interview. So I did 63 interviews, basically.
And are you up and posted on
them? They're all up now. Nice. Everything's up. Nice. I spent about, it took me about the full week upon getting back to get them all finished, but they are all up. They're all doing really well, too.
Good.
This is between my two channels, also. So it's Pixel Dan and Toy Yak, because I do a lot of the kids' stuff, and I do all the collector stuff. So it's a whole mixture of stuff from Toy Fair.
Yeah, and they've got it all there.
But it's all there. It's very, very cool. Had a great time. I just like doing it. It's cool to, like, make the contacts and do this sort of thing. It's cool because it's a little bit different than how everybody else covers it, you know? Yeah. Like, I'm not really there trying to get pictures before everybody else. I focus on doing these interviews because it's something that I feel like I'm good at, and it's kind of like my thing, and I'm known for it. So I really focused on just doing that, and I think
and
it worked really well.
I imagine the guys you're talking to, and I think you've said that in the past, I think they seem to really like it.
Yeah, and that's what's cool about it.
Actually just come up and talk to them.
Well, and, you know, I've gotten to the point where, like, these companies are wanting me to come to them to do these interviews and product walkthroughs because they see me doing it with other companies. So, like, this year, for the first time, I did walkthroughs with Mezco Toys and Diamond Select. And it was really cool because both of those companies, like, wanted me to come to do this. Yeah. Like, Zach specifically, I'm even call him out by name because he's a good guy, but Zach specifically from Diamond Select, like, was, like, sending me emails and everything, and he was just like, what do I got to do to get you to come over to my booth and do the product walkthrough with me? I was like, I'm so sorry. I'm not, like, purposely not coming over there. Let's schedule a time. Let's get this done. So it's cool.
Well,
it seems like...
if they're starting to add, did you give them the old Dr. Evil?
Yeah.
$1 million.
Definitely $1 million. Actually, you have to give me one of everything that we talk about in the product. No, I'm just kidding. But yeah, it's kind of cool that I'm at that point where I'm like, all these companies actually want me to come in. Or if I haven't had any prior contact with them before Toy Fair, it's always great to walk up and introduce myself, and they go, I know exactly who you are. And I think that's always cool, too.
Cool.
So
good stuff.
Yeah, it was really cool. It was a great experience. I always do like it, even though it's a ton of work. I think you saw my Facebook post. I did have to get on there at one point because I kind of was getting real frazzled. My days are so stressful, and I feel really bad because I want to, like, get everybody the stuff that they want to see, and I understand. We had this whole podcast last year where I broke down how Toy Fair works.
Yeah.
And I want to keep shoving that link in everybody's face because I really think you guys all need to go listen to that podcast so you can understand how Toy Fair works. Because I do this all day nonstop, like I just said, with these appointments. I don't have time to actually like put together these videos for you guys until after I get back to the hotel room, and that's if I'm lucky and haven't passed out in my bed.
Yeah.
You know, by the time I've done transferring all the footage off my camera.
You spend all that time out there. You'd like to enjoy New York for a couple of hours. Try to get
some dinner. My wife was with me this time. So I actually did on Valentine's Day. I surprised her with tickets to a Broadway show. I took her out to see a show on Broadway. I wanted to do something nice while I was there too. Because I don't usually get to do that while I'm out there.
Yeah.
So I feel bad, but, you know, at the same time, I'm just like, I cannot believe everybody is, like, hounding me. Like people are – some of them were getting really nasty with me. Like, how come you haven't posted such and such video yet? Why haven't you posted this interview yet? Like, guys, I just walked out of that booth, like, an hour ago, and I'm still here at Toy Fair. How do you expect me to post it? Like, come on, guys. So, you know, and I understand. Like, it's one of those things where I have to take a step back a minute, and I'm like, okay, well, at least they're excited to see what I have to put out there.
Yeah.
They just want to get the information, and, you know, I'm trying to put it out there as fast as I can, but sometimes I have to put that reminder out there.
Yeah.
Like, guys, just remember, like, I'm not streaming live from Toy Fair.
Yeah. It's just like the internet culture.
Right? Yeah.
Like,
I mean, it's,
you know, like,
instant gratification.
Exactly.
Yep. We all want it now.
Get it when you can, and hopefully everyone's happy.
But I think everybody's like, you know, everybody seems to be totally happy with everything I did put up, like I said. So,
Very cool.
it's not a big deal. It was just kind of one of those things where I was like, oh, guys, come on.
What was the coolest thing that you saw that you could talk about?
So there was a couple things that I really liked. I think my favorite stuff has to be probably still from NECA Toys. I'm still so much in love with a lot of things NECA's doing. I think they're an awesome company. They're really great with fan interaction too, which helps a lot. But they've been doing those crazy video game figures that I keep showing you. So they revealed a Gremlins one, which so excited about because that's the one I keep, like, every time I review one of their video game figures, I always have a spot at the end of the video where I'm like, what could they come out with next? And I always show the little gremlin sprite. So it's like, they finally did it. And I was like, yay, there's my gremlin. So they're doing a gremlin based on the old Nintendo game, Gremlins 2, which was the name of that game. And then they're also doing an NES version of Godzilla from the old Nintendo game. So those are fun. But I think what was most exciting is I was talking to Randy at NECA. And this is actually in the product walkthrough, so if you guys have already seen this, you already heard us discuss it a little bit. But I asked what the possibility was of them releasing their Ninja Turtles figures, because they did those comic book Turtles several years ago.
Yeah.
If there was a chance that they could release one of those repainted to look like the old Nintendo game in a Nintendo box. And the reason that that's kind of off limits is because Playmates Toys holds the Master Turtles license, and that's why NECA had to stop doing that line initially because once new Turtles stuff started coming out, like the cartoon, NECA couldn't put their toys out anymore.
Yeah.
Playmates had the master rights. So I was like, is there any chance we could ever see that? Cause that would be awesome. You guys already have those sculpts. You could just repaint it, give us an NES Ninja Turtle. And, you know, I was shocked to hear him say, you know, there's probably a better chance of it than you think. I'm working on it right now.
Nice.
He's like, I actually have a meeting with the Ninja Turtles people as soon as we're done here with this walkthrough, because they're coming here to talk specifically about that.
Awesome.
I was like, amazing. Like that. I thought this was some kind of far-fetched like dream, but these are the same guys that were able to put out this amazing movie Batman figure that I didn't think was possible. And they did it. Because it's
like,
just
like the movie Batman.
The movie Batman. Yep,
the
the 89.
Yeah.
And that's one of those things where they just fell into it because, you know, DC Collectibles and Mattel both hold the DC licenses. So NECA can't really do a 7-inch scale DC figure. But DC liked what they were doing with the video game stuff so much, they let him do that NES Batman.
Yep.
And then he was able to find a way to convince them, let me just release this painted like the movie Batman because we've got this awesome sculpt now.
Yeah.
And they were like, well, we're putting out this new Blu-ray, so if you find some way to do it with that Blu-ray, go ahead. So he made it happen, and it's just amazing how like they're able to work.
We talked about it last episode the whole time, Dan. You're living in a world where Spider-Man can join the MCU.
Yeah, right?
Anything is possible
Anything is possible.
Anything.
And that's kind of how I feel. Like that Batman came out, and I feel like it just opened a whole new world for possibilities for them. I love this. We're actually holding it here right now. Yeah, I love this because they,
it's awesome.
They even put like that old gold packaging, like the old Kenner toys. The back of it looks like it. I mean, it's just the coolest Batman figure that's ever been made. I love it so much.
It is awesome.
So, kudos to NECA. They did some amazing things. DC Collectibles is another one. When we're talking about DC, they had some amazing stuff because they're doing this entire line of Batman the Animated Series figures,
The animated series.
Yep, and I've actually got some right behind you if you want to look at them.
I do.
So they're doing this entire line of Batman the Animated Series figures, and they're coming out with so many characters for it, and they're even doing a big 2-scale Batmobile.
Oh, sweet.
Which is amazing. Looks just like the animated series Batmobile. Has like nice lights and everything on the inside. Looks like a real high end like collector piece. It's going to be so amazing. So that is one thing that I am very, very excited about. And it's cool because they're doing both the new Batman Adventures versions and animated series versions.
Yep.
So some of these characters are based on that second incarnation, but they're also doing the actual animated series versions too. So they're coming out with so many cool characters done in that Bruce Timm style, which is so great.
Awesome.
Yeah. So I think those and the NECA stuff were my favorite things I saw at all of Toy Fair. I mean, they were just so amazing and so many surprises. You know, you just walk in and you see that stuff and it makes you feel like a kid. And that's the kind of stuff that I love, you know? So it was a good time. I really enjoyed getting to see everything. I love doing everything. If you guys haven't checked out the videos yet, please do me a favor. Go watch them, man, because it was a lot of work, but it was fun, and I would love to share that with you guys. So it'd be very cool for you to check it out.
Oh, I'm just so impressed that you can get 63 videos up in like a week.
Oh, dude, I can't believe it either. Oh, well, and I do have to definitely give props to my partner, Val Staples, because not only did he follow me around the entire weekend with a video camera and actually film all this stuff, but he did help me with the editing on all of the Toy Yak videos. So he did a lot of that stuff.
Okay.
So that helped me a ton
with
getting this stuff out in a timely manner. So he definitely deserves props for all of that. He's been a big help.
Good shout out.
Yeah, good shout out to
Thanks,
Val.
Thanks, Val.
You're the man, Val. Last fun thing from Toy Fair, I thought it'd be a fun little story, a good tidbit for you. I was interviewing the Four Horsemen, who I've talked about with you before. They're the sculptors who do a lot of the Masters of the Universe stuff. They do their own stuff too. So I was getting ready to do an interview with them, or I started an interview with them, to talk about the Masters stuff. And as soon as we got done, Corn Boy, which is one of the Horsemen, he just starts cracking up. Well, because he kind of chuckles at the beginning of the video. As soon as we finish the video, he starts laughing, and he goes, "Your shift to an announcer voice catches me off guard every time we do this." And all I could think of was you when he said that. And I just, because I told him, I said, my podcast partner says that to me every time we start recording a podcast. So
we do a little bitty mic check, and it's just Dan. And then all of a sudden, I was like, all right, I guess we'll hit record. Hey, we're back on the internet.
We're back on the internet. Yeah, so that was fun.
I always do a double take. Like, oh, okay, it's still dead.
Yep, still me. Yay, Toy Fair.
Well,
so
that's awesome. Good stuff.
Yeah, and that was kind of like the Super Bowl of toys.
Yeah.
And your movie Super Bowl also just happened.
Yeah. We'll just segue over. Good.
Let's do it. You like that? Yeah.
Well, it was 1 week ago, was Oscar Sunday.
Woo!
Which is always just a favorite time of year for me, which is hilarious because I don't really particularly respect the awards themselves.
Yeah.
But the ceremony, the celebration, all that stuff, it's just so much fun. Like, these couple of weeks in February are always a blast. And we do, again, I don't know how many theater chains do it, but AMC's, where we have in town here, they always do a Best Picture Showcase, they call it. And for two Saturdays before the actual Oscars, they just split up all of the Best Picture nominees, which was 8 this year, like a maximum of 10, and 8 is what got in this year.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I'll go over at some point, one of these years I'll go over and really, because I've read about how that voting process works and how they decide how many, and it was kind of interesting. I just don't have the details handy on it right now, but it always puzzles me when they do stuff like that, because there were a couple of movies that I guaranteed were going to be nominated for Best Picture this year that just weren't. And it's one thing when, like, they get to capacity and the ones that you think are going to make it just aren't there. But, like, they had room for at least two more. And there were two more that I thought were shoo-ins, and they just weren't there.
What are those?
So it's so weird how... Gone Girl, I thought for sure, with the critical reception it got, plus the commercial reception it got, plus just... I mean, I've seen the movie three times. It's amazing. you know, to not even merit a nomination was really weird to me. Because that was one, even when it came out in October and everyone was already talking, it's Fincher and the performances are so good and the story so, you know, compelling. I don't know how you can, I don't want to talk. It's one of those movies you can't really talk about much because you're afraid at any point you might accidentally give something away.
Right.
You know, but it was just a super good, it was a, the book was a page turner. And the movie was one of the most faithful adaptations of a book I've ever seen.
Yeah.
You know, like, they changed a couple things here and there, and they had to cut a couple of things for time, but they had the woman who wrote it, Gillian Flynn, actually did the screenplay.
Oh, that's always cool.
I was super excited when that happened, because that's one of those, like, Hollywood trend things that you always hope will go away, and I think comic book movies have really helped push away from that, and hopefully that's more going more into the mainstream stuff, because you always hear about one of two things. You either get the horror stories where, you know, the writer doesn't, of the book, when they option the movie, they give themselves plenty of power,
yeah,
but they're not actually, like, writing, or Hollywood comes in, swoops in, and buys a story and completely cuts out anybody who put the story together,
yeah.
You know, which, and I get that there's a difference between writing a novel and writing a screenplay. You can't just, you know, if you're trained in one, you can't necessarily do the other particularly well, but at the same time, maybe you can, because it's all still, if it's your story and your baby and you can get the new format down, you're probably the best person to take the job.
Right.
So it was really neat to just sit there and watch that movie and go, man, this is that book.
That is awesome.
That's all there is to it, yeah. You know? But I thought for sure that was going to at least get a nomination, if not serious contention, and it just wasn't even on the list.
That's
and then
weird.
The other one that threw me was Foxcatcher, which was that Steve Carell movie.
Yeah.
Based on a true story. Yeah. Him and Mark Ruffalo and Channing Tatum, all amazing performances. But that was one of those that was getting so much buzz, I kind of thought it would be in there. And what surprised me the most is when the nominations came out, it was nominated for screenplay, for director, for best actor, and for best supporting actor, but not for best picture.
Why?
Exactly. So it was among the best at doing everything except everything.
Yeah, you know? Except being a movie.
Yeah, exactly. You know, like, all of the individual aspects, it was within the top five, but of actual whole movies put together, it wasn't even top eight, you know? So I thought that was kind of weird, but with the exclusion of Gone Girl, that was the only one of the movies that I really was sure was going to get nominated that I had actually already seen. I did a pretty successful job of ignoring, or avoiding, I should say, a lot of the award contenders until award season, so that when I went to that marathon, this year was the first year that I've sat through all brand new movies to me.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, I had not
that
seen
it. That made it really exciting.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. I will say I don't know if I'll shoot for that every year, because there is a benefit to being able to sit through something a second time and really dissect it. But it was nice that I finally got that one year where, like, I feel like I've tried for a couple of years now, and I've always hit one or two of them, because you never know for sure what's going to get nominated until, you know, so you don't always skip movies all year.
Right.
Grand Budapest was the one that almost got me this year, because I wanted to see that real bad.
And I hadn't,
you know, it came out in March or May or something like that, I think, of last year. So at the time, I wasn't thinking award season at all. I was just thinking, ooh, I want to see that. And just happened to miss it. And then it got nominated. So I was like, cool. That was the one. So, like, now I feel like I've done it once. I've accomplished that thing where they were all new. And now I don't have to worry about
it. You don't have to do it again. Yeah.
You know, yeah. But I guess the nominees that I should go over. That first Saturday we watched, what did we start with? We started with the Grand Budapest Hotel.
Oh, cool.
And then we moved into Whiplash, and then Birdman, and then Selma. And then the second Saturday was the day right before the Oscars, and that was Boyhood, and then The Theory of Everything, and then The Imitation Game, and then American Sniper. And so that first week, you know, I feel like the first week was kind of the stronger week. Birdman, which, if you were paying any attention, is, you know, spoiler alert, that's what won Best Picture, was probably the one I was most anticipating going into, because I love Keaton.
Yeah.
And I love the Keaton Batman, and this is supposed to be kind of a spoof on,
you know,
he's playing a meta version of himself, you know?
Right.
Probably the least impressed I was of all the, well, if I had to rank them 1 through 8, that was probably my 7th favorite. Like, I didn't hate it, but it got a little too weird for me. And the whole movie is sort of about the emotional breakdown and the mental breakdown of his character as you go through. So some of the weird stuff they were doing was really cool, but sometimes I feel like they just they push the boundary of weird and you don't really know what's going on and you can't know what's going on.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, movies just push that just to push it sometimes. And I'm a meat and potatoes guy. Like, I love movies, but I love the weird ones and I love the ones that make you think. But a lot of times I also would just kind of wish I knew what was happening sometimes in movies. There does seem to be that trend where they feel like, you know, the more bizarre they go, the more notice they kind of get sometimes. And I feel like the performances were out of this world in that movie. The cinematography was real cool because it was shot, the way it was shot, it felt like it was one continuous scene.
Oh,
and I knew that going in. I had heard about that. So the whole time I'm watching it, I'm just kind of looking for, you know, oh, they're going through a dark tunnel. That's where they did a cut. Just kind of watching. And that stuff was really neat. It's just the movie itself, like the storyline, by the time it got to the end, I was just kind of like, okay, I guess, you know. But it was one of those years where, and I would say this is 2 years in a row, I don't want to call it a mediocre crop of movies, because they were all very good. There was, you know, I said I had some complaints about Birdman, and then Boyhood was the other one I would complain about. It wasn't a bad movie by any means. It was way too long and gimmicky.
Yeah, I remember you were talking about that with me, too. Didn't you also say that one like felt like it didn't end, or, like it didn't have an actual ending, right?
Yeah, which is another kind of trend, especially in the artsy movies. Like, they just sort of go for a while, and then all of a sudden the credits are rolling, and nothing's happened, nothing's resolved. You're just like in the middle. Feels like you're in the middle of a scene.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden there's just names going on. And for a movie that long, it throws you even more, because you're already sitting there going, this has been on forever. And then all of a sudden the credits are rolling and you're like, did I fall asleep?
What did I miss?
Or what? Yeah. You know, yeah. I thought that movie was funny too, because I didn't dislike it per se. It was just way too long, and the gimmick, what, you know, it's cool that they shot it. For those of you who don't know, that's the one where they shot over 12 years. Like, they cast like a 6-year-old boy and all the cast and actors. And they would just get together once a year and film, like, that year's scenes.
Yeah.
So they're basically filming this kid growing up through that whole actual... through the kid actually, you know, growing up. So it's kind of a neat idea, except my problem is, I mean, through the magic of filmmaking is how we tell stories. We don't need to do them real time. You know, that's the whole thing, you know. Like, we have movies with talking raccoons and you know, space trees, and all these superheroes and all this fantastic stuff, and we do that because we don't need to actually have these things to film them. We can just do it.
Yeah.
So you can just give me probably 3 different kids and tell me that exact same story, and my mind will just assume, hey, those are all the same people for this, you know? Yeah.
They were like, what if we made a movie where we actually watched a kid grow up?
Yeah.
Wait,
yeah.
I mean, like, I can actually watch my kid grow up.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Like, I'm really doing that.
I'm doing that.
Doing it now.
Right now. Yeah.
And I have done that with myself and all my friends, you know?
Right.
So, and again, I mean, all the respect to Richard Linklater. I think he's a great filmmaker, but I really feel like this was just kind of one of those gimmick things. Like, 12 years ago, he went, you know what? I need an Oscar. So maybe in 12 years I can have one. You know?
I need an Oscar.
And it almost worked.
What could I do
that
might get me one of those?
But, I mean, it got all the attention and everything. And, again, it wasn't bad. It was just unnecessarily long.
Yeah.
And I don't mind long movies. I just want it to mean something.
Yeah.
And this is one of those where I watched it for a while, and I remember thinking, you know, this is a lot more interesting than I thought it was going to be, and it's probably, I mean, it's got to be at least halfway over. Oh, 40 minutes. It's been on 40 minutes. There's 2 hours left of this movie. Okay, now immediately I'm worried again.
Yeah.
You know? So, but they were all good. All 8 of the movies were at least decent. There was none I hated, which is always a plus when you go through the lineup, because there's usually a couple of them that I just feel are absolutely, ugh.
Yeah.
Like, no reason to sit through watching. And 2 years in a row, I haven't had any of those. But my problem is, I don't know how many great movies there's been in the last couple of years either. Like, it took me forever to remember what even won last year.
Oh, yeah.
Sitting there watching.
Yeah, I remember.
And I just look at these and I'm going, all right, these are interesting and they're compelling, but in 5 years, am I going to remember that any of these movies exist? You know, and I think Whiplash, yes, because of J.K. Simmons, who rightfully won Best Supporting Actor for just such an amazing job, you know. And I think American Sniper probably will be, partially because it's really good and partially because of the, you know, the real-life drama surrounding it.
Right.
I think those two will at least be memorable, but the rest of them, I'm not sure. I mean, I loved Grand Budapest Hotel, but ultimately, I mean, it wasn't my favorite Wes Anderson.
Yeah.
You know, so it was great, but I don't know that, you know, in 5 years I won't be sitting around thinking, I need to watch that again. I'll probably just pop Tenenbaums back in or, you know, or whatever. So not completely forgettable necessarily, but just not, I mean, these aren't the movies that are going to stand out through history. And it's been, I think, a few years since we've had some really strong contenders for stuff like that. I think the last time I remember the Academy really getting everything right, per my opinion, was The Departed, and that was like 07.
Oh, yeah.
You know, yeah. So
that was a good year.
So they've had some ups and downs since then, but they've hit a couple of just kind of, I hate to say mediocre, because they're good. They're solid movies. I just don't know how lasting they are.
Right, you know? Right.
And I don't know how relatable they are to the general public. Because, again, it's one of those years, the reason they expanded from 5 Best Picture nominees to a maximum of 10, almost specifically because of The Dark Knight, because everybody thought that was going to be the comic book movie that finally merited the attention, and it got completely shut out. Well, I mean, it got Best Supporting Actor, because Ledger won posthumously.
That's right. That's
but
right.
Other than that, it was just shut down from the big stuff and Best Picture specifically, and so the Academy went, well, maybe we can revise this, make it more interesting. Because this is such a weird dichotomy, this party is. And that's basically what the Oscars are. It's just a big party.
It's a big party. Yeah.
It's thrown by people who love themselves and the things that they do.
Yep.
And they want to celebrate the things that they do and themselves. You know?
Yep.
And again, nothing disparaging. I mean, the wrestling stuff, we've thrown our own banquets.
Exactly.
To celebrate what we do.
Exactly.
Cool. This is just on a national scale. So that makes it feel a little more uppity.
Right.
But you got to remember, you know, this isn't... I always get myself pumped up for the results of the awards, and then every year I see the results and I go, ugh, I have to keep reminding myself that who wins doesn't really matter.
Right.
Like, the nominations kind of do, because that's what generates a lot of the talk.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, it really is. That's where those fringe things can maybe pull recognition. So, like, there's no way some of these movies are ever going to win Best Picture, but it's neat that some of them get nominated.
Right, yeah.
You know, so the nominations, I think, matter.
Well, I think so, too, because, like, from my perspective, as a guy who doesn't pay attention to all that kind of stuff, when this stuff gets nominated, that's how I hear about these movies half the time. And I think that's how it is with probably most of the general public. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, people find out about these movies because they're nominated for Oscars, and that's what makes them want to watch them.
Yep.
So it is important that they get the nominations. And I think that is the most important part. Just getting the nomination is definitely a good thing for them.
Because, like I said, like, I loved Whiplash. Yeah. I never would have saw that if I hadn't if it hadn't gotten a nomination. Because even when it came out, even when the nominations came out, I was like, that drummer movie? With J. Jonah Jameson?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah. You know, well, I'll give it a try, whatever. But then it turned out to be just really, really, really good. But that's, you know, the thing with expanding the nominations was, in theory, supposed to make the Oscars a little more mainstream. Because on the one hand, there's the strong feeling that they don't, I mean, they're gonna do their awards. They're going to vote the way they want to vote. And I've got some pretty strong theories that I don't know exactly how the voting works.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty positive that most of the people who vote don't actually watch 90% of these movies. you know, and that's just because it's such a political thing.
Yeah.
I mean, when a movie gets when a movie wants a nomination, the agents or an actor or whatever it is, the agents are working on it. The marketing people are working on it. They are pushing ads. Like, if you're in L.A., you open a newspaper, you see a giant ad that's like, hey, Oscar consideration for my movie, you know? So it's not even like, hey, go watch my movie, I hope you like it. It's like, Oscar voters, hey, you know.
That's
so
crazy.
So it's a lot of campaigning, it's almost like running a political race.
Right.
Which is another reason why, again, I love the award ceremonies, but the winners don't matter. As much as I want them to, doesn't.
Yeah.
You know, but they want to celebrate their own industry, and they want to do it without outside opinion. They don't care what you think. They're going to pick what they like. But they still want ratings.
Right.
Like, they want people to watch and care. And so they do things like, well, we'll expand the best picture race so we can get some more of this mainstream stuff in there, and maybe the ratings will go up if some of these high-dollar movies, you know, kind of get nominated. And then what do? They nominate seven really, really small movies that make no money whatsoever, and then American Sniper made a ton, you know, came in right there at the end. But, I mean, that was, you know, that was a late December release, just for awards consideration. They popped it out in a couple of cities so it would be eligible.
Yeah.
And then it actually came out in January and then made all that money. So it slipped in there right at the end.
That's crazy.
if it hadn't been for that movie, man, the combined grosses for the other seven weren't, I don't think, a tenth of what American Sniper itself made.
That's,
you know,
amazing.
So, yeah, and that's the thing that always kind of throws me. Like, you guys set these rules up to try to garner attention, but then you still shoot yourselves in the foot by not caring about any of these.
Yeah.
And that's another reason why I was shocked Gone Girl wasn't on there, because, again, they, you know, they need the occasional commercially successful movie.
Yeah.
So people pay more attention. Right. And they had one, you know, gift-wrapped and handed to them, and they just ignored it.
Because people do like to watch the movie that they enjoyed get an honor, like winning an Oscar.
Yeah.
Like, you kind of get that thing where people want to root for it to win. Yep. Like, I love that movie. I hope it wins. Yeah. You know, I'm going to tune in and see if it wins.
Yeah. So, and that's the thing. It hurts the water cooler competition when they sit around and go, hey, did you see the Oscars? No, not really.
Yeah.
You know, I caught one of the movies by accident on cable.
Didn't even know any of the movies, so I didn't know it was going to win.
Yeah. You know, everybody, and anybody who did turn in, again, it was the American Sniper was the only one that, like, Middle America connected with in any way, shape, or form.
Right.
The rest of them were all, and then there was four of the eight were almost, if they weren't biopics, they were at least true story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, the only actual, like, Birdman you will call an actual movie, even though it was sort of almost a meta-biopic again.
Yeah.
I mean, this wasn't Michael Keaton. This was someone much crazier. It was just one of those fun-type things.
Yeah.
But he was still practically playing himself. Ed Norton was practically playing themselves. Overdone versions of themselves, you know.
Right.
That's kind of what they were going for. But not counting that, you know, you count that as a real movie. Whiplash was a real movie. Grand Budapest Hotel was a real movie. And Boyhood was sort of...
Boyhood!
Boyhood was sort of a real movie, you know. But then the other four were all historical dramas or biopics or whatever. And I like biopics when they're done well, and these four were all pretty decent. But that's too much of one genre for Oscar consideration. And again, like, I can enjoy these movies, but I really like to celebrate stories and original content sometimes, too. And so all of this was, you know, I mean, Eddie Redmayne won Best Actor for portraying Stephen Hawking, and he was amazing. I was going to say awesome to just watch, except it was really kind of hurtful to just watch, because it's such a, just watching this guy go through this crippling disease, you know, but watching him transform, you know, from, you know, young, good-looking Eddie Redmayne and just kind of, you know, morph himself into this, you know, this body that doesn't work anymore, it was pretty powerful. But outside of that one, you know, a lot of times when you do these historical dramas, you're doing an impression of someone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've got news footage and you watch the news footage and then you go and do that. And again, that's impressive as well. I just think it's bogging the series down to have nothing but, you know, half of your movies are things you can go watch on the History Channel.
Yeah.
Potentially, you know. So not that I would pick any one of them individually out to say, well, this wasn't good enough. It's just that, you know, you've got some real works of fiction and, you know, performances that are actually being created and stories that are really out there being, you know, written and coming from someone's heart, and you want to see stuff like that get a little bit more recognition too, you know, not just what's the period piece flavor of the month for this year, you know, that kind of pops out. So
right.
So overall, the award ceremony itself we haven't even talked about.
Yeah. Well, NPH was hosting.
Yeah.
So that was kind
Loved
of fun.
It. Yep.
Did you like him?
Yeah,
as a host?
I really did.
Yeah.
I did. You know, he's so affable.
Yeah,
you know, he's just a personable guy. You just want to hang out with him. You
yeah,
know, when
that's
he's
how
on
I
there.
Feel
and,
too.
And my understanding is he's really nice in real life. I've always got that impression anyway.
Uh-huh.
So it's one of those things where it's nice to see somebody come up there where you go, you know, that I think that's a good guy, and he's got good jokes, and you know, and I didn't hear too many bad reviews.
Yeah.
Afterwards, after the ceremony, they weren't as stellar as I thought they were. Like, I was watching it going, that's the best hosting I've seen in a while. Like, from the opening bit on, that opening bit, I think, was my favorite since at least Hugh Jackman.
The Hugh Jackman one?
Yeah.
That's the one that, well, I mean, it definitely made me remember the Hugh Jackman one. So I think it's safe to say it was right around as good as the Jackman one.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But I just remember thinking myself, I'm like, I adored it. So I was like, hey, that was great. I loved it. And then I saw some of the reviews the next day, and everybody's like, that's pretty good. I'm like, I thought he was
pretty good at, like, on-the-spot jokes about things that had just happened, which I was really, you know, happy with. Like, you know, the friggin' John Travolta, man. Why is he such a creepo these days? Like, you know, because they had him and Idina Menzel come out together, which was awesome because of what happened last year with him mispronouncing her name.
But then
he's, like, touching her all over her face and just being weird and creepy. And it's just like, what is going on with John Travolta these days? But, you know, immediately after that segment happened, there was NPH to make a joke about him touching all over her face and being creepy, you know? And that was awesome. Yep. So,
well, the joke leading up to that was probably one of my favorite of the nights or whatever, because again, she was the one, and I forgot it was even her. I actually thought it was a different, I remembered him, John Travolta, butchering a name last year, and I thought it was of someone else. So I got kind of confused for a second, but when NPH came up to introduce that segment, that's when he goes, you know, hey, Benedict Cumberbatch, and he said something about Benedict Cumberbatch that was nice, and then he goes, you know, and also the Benedict Cumberbatch is the sound that John Travolta makes when he tries to say Ben Affleck.
Yeah. That's right. That's right. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh. It's because he, what did he even say when he announced Idina Menzel? He was like, Hakeem. It was just really bad. Really bad. I know that wasn't right, but that was.
That's basically what it was last year, about how
bad it was.
Yeah. So the ceremony I really liked. Had a good time watching it. There was some neat stuff in there. Our buddy and frequent collaborator, Ryan Needham, was on screen.
Ryan was on screen.
If you go back and watch the little bird band scene that NPH did when he got, they came back and they were trying to find him, and his robe was caught in a doorway, and then he ended up having to come scurrying out in his skivvies. You know, as people start to line up behind him, one of the first guys that pops around the corner there was Ryan Needham.
There he is, of the Geek Easy podcast.
That's right. Famous from us.
Famous from us first, and he was on the Oscars. Yeah. That's awesome. Shout out
to our buddy. That was cool.
We have to ask him about that eventually.
We can get him back
here on the show.
Yeah. I'm pretty positive we're allowed to say that since the show's already aired.
I don't think he was on there. Yeah, I don't think that matters. But he's not here right now because he's hanging out with The Rock and stuff.
Yeah, he sent us that picture.
He sent us a picture of him with The Rock today.
Yeah. I'm assuming that was from the Oscars, but I'm not even positive.
I have no idea. All I know is that he does cooler things than us sometimes.
So, great ceremony. Again, the results weren't the way I had necessarily hoped. But, you know, some of them were. J.K. Simmons.
Yeah.
You know, super happy he won that. And I did think Eddie Redmayne did a great job. There was a couple of the acting fields were just stacked this year.
Yeah.
Like, way more than usual. And so that was cool. So, you know, they gave us kind of a light supply on Best Picture, maybe. But they juiced up, you know, the acting ones. Because a couple of those, the Best Actor and Best Supporting Actor, both, I remember I had actually seen all of the movies.
Right.
For both of those. And I remember thinking, man, everybody here was great. The only thing I will say is Mark Ruffalo got nominated for Best Supporting Actor for Foxcatcher, and he was amazing in that movie. I honestly think Channing Tatum was better.
Really?
In that same movie.
Oh, wow.
You know, yeah, I thought his was more of a you know, there was more to his character, I think.
Yeah.
You know, more screen time and more chance. And it was a transformation for him, too, because he looked like a gorilla in that movie. You know?
Oh,
yeah.
Wow, that's cool.
But that's nothing against Mark Ruffalo. He was great there, too. That was also the category where two Hulks were nominated.
Oh, yeah. That's right, yeah.
Because Mark Ruffalo and Edward Norton.
And Norton were both there.
Were both up.
Well, that was one of our fun, like, we could have played a drinking game at the Oscars for every celebrity that came up on stage that was some form of superhero or supervillain now.
Oh, we would have been plastered by 8:30.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's amazing how many of them are now heroes or villains.
I feel like all of the presenters were straight out of comic book movies.
Yep.
You know, just popping one after the other.
That was
a parade of them. Which, was super fun to watch.
Yeah.
Um, So yeah, I really enjoyed the ceremony. Decent crop of movies. Nothing terrible. Just nothing. Well, we'll see in 5 years.
Yeah,
I don't know that there was anything that was lasting.
See, lasting is the right word.
You know, and that's one of those things, and I've probably mentioned it on the show before. I actually saw a Cracked video. I don't remember if I sent this to you or not. Kudos to the guys at Cracked, by the way. If anyone out there listens to this show, man, I love your stuff. but they did a video, and they were talking about how they wished the Oscars were on like a five-year time delay. And Ryan himself is actually the one who first brought up that theory to me several years ago, and I've kind of stuck on it since. Man, how awesome would that be if you were celebrating movies with a little bit more perspective? Because how many times do you get this, like, flash in the pan where you see something win and you go, whoa, really? That was weird. And then, you know, lo and behold, 5 years later, you know, who remembers what that was? And they had some great, I wish I could remember more examples. They had a couple of great ones in that video, and one that pops into mind is one of my always go-tos. Like, I love Forrest Gump. Forrest Gump is a great movie. Forrest Gump beat Pulp Fiction and The Shawshank Redemption in 1994 for Best Picture.
Whoa.
That's absurd. You know, like, that is like Shawshank today is widely renowned as quite possibly the best movie ever made.
Yeah.
Like, it topped several lists, you know, and it didn't even, you know, it was honored to get contention that year. In the race,
man.
You know, because you don't have when it first, and especially with a lot of these movies, you're voting on things that have been out for less than 2 months. A lot of times,
uh-huh.
I mean, like your American Sniper, they pop a few of these into New York and L.A. the last weekend or two of the year, so that they get contention. Nobody's seen these things.
Yeah,
you don't know.
Yeah,
you know, there's no way everybody doing the voting. There's certainly no way everybody in the public has had a chance to have any kind of opinion on this stuff. They just slide it into the rug, and then you vote on it. And again, that's not a knock on Sniper. Sniper was one of my favorite movies of the year. That's just as an example. I
mean,
you always see stuff like that.
Right.
They hold movies back until, at earliest, October, if they think there's any type of award contention in that movie. Because they want it to be fresh. They want to be, they're campaigning to good, you know, to be effective,
right?
All that stuff. So, but you can't. I mean, you're trying to pick the best movie of the entire year out of a crop of these weird artsy flicks that came out within the last 60 days. It's not the best way to do it,
exactly.
You know, if you really want to see what's best. So,
right.
So one day we'll just start our own award show.
I think that's a good
idea.
It'll
be the 5 year ago Oscars.
the 5 year ago Oscars.
Yeah.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah. So you always wish for stuff like that. But again, it's not about, I always remind myself, it's not about who wins the awards. It's just about the party.
Yeah.
You know, so for 2 weekends, I pretty much did nothing but watch movies. You know, I woke up that Saturday morning. The marathon started at 10. I woke up at 7 and started shoveling snow because we had a ton. So I could get out there by 9 so I could get the seats that I wanted. You know, the movie started at 10. We watched those 4 movies that day, got home about 9. We got home, and my wife and I watched the end of Dial M for Murder, which we had started earlier in the week and just weren't able to stay awake through. Again, awesome movie. We like the older ones a lot. We started watching it too late, and we're both old people now. So we passed out.
Right.
So we finished that. I did a little bit of remodeling work on my basement, woke up Sunday morning at 7:30, started watching movies, caught 3 more Oscar-style movies that day, and a little bit of Captain America, which
nice.
I still think was probably the best movie of last year. Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
I'm in. I love that movie.
Yeah. You know, and then you know, you and a few other people came over for the ceremony. We sat through and watched, you know, 3.5 hours of just celebrating movies, and then I passed out that night.
Yeah.
And that's a weekend.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So
that's
I don't care who wins what. That was a fun time.
Yeah. You got a good time with it. And that's exactly how it should be, you know, and you celebrated the entire weekend and just watched movies. It's kind of like what we do with WrestleMania every
year.
Yeah,
absolutely.
We turn the whole weekend into a wrestling weekend, and
yep.
we watch lots of wrestling and celebrate it. That's how you have to enjoy these kinds of things.
That's coming up. Just
it is coming up.
All my favorite parties in the first 3 months.
I know, right? They all just happen around the same time. Yeah, that's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to that, too. Well, let's go in and keep talking about more movie news already, because we got a few things to talk about that are not Oscar-related.
Yep, we both did sort of our soapbox thing.
Yeah.
For the episode.
Yeah.
We
got a few pieces of news. We're not going to get too in depth with stuff this week, but one of the things I wanted to talk about popped up last week, and we haven't even really had a lot of discussion about this. But DC or Warner Brothers released the first full image of Jason Momoa as Aquaman, as he's going to appear in Batman versus Superman. So that kind of caught the internet on fire last week with a lot of interesting comments.
Which I thought was really funny because I saw that picture and I was like, hey, there's Aquaman.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. There, like, what did you think about that?
Less blonde than I assumed, because for some reason I had classic Aquaman in mind.
Me too.
But that is not to say that I was upset by it. It was just, I mean, he looked like Khal Drogo. You know, that's what...
Yeah, it's just, I don't know. Like, I don't hate it. I'm going to throw that out there. I don't hate it. Yeah. Like, and I don't want to come on here and do our typical DC bashing thing, because that actually doesn't really elicit that from me. But at the same time, I looked at it and I was just like, well, here's what I feel like is happening. Aquaman kind of is a big joke of a character with a lot of people. Nobody likes... I mean, there are Aquaman fans out there, but he's kind of one of those heroes that often gets thrown out there as the nobody likes Aquaman kind of guy.
He's the running egg on Family Guy.
Yeah,
Superman's not right. Well, Superman can be too, but you know what I mean. You know?
Yeah, he's always kind of been like this running joke thing. So I kind of feel like Warner Brothers went, look, we gotta really, really, really make Aquaman look like a badass.
Yeah,
we have to. Because people are going to be expecting him to be a pansy. And I kind of feel like that's just what they did. They were like, let's just make this guy as hardcore as we can.
Yeah.
Now, he does still kind of have a bit of an Aquaman look to him. And he's had long hair and a beard in the comics before. Yeah. So this isn't like off base too much. I think my biggest problem with it is the same problem we have with Wonder Woman. There is not enough color.
Yeah.
He's like, he doesn't have the Aquaman colors.
Like, this whole
movie
is just going to be nothing but sepia.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. Yeah. And maybe this is just the weird photography they're using
for
these.
For the record, that was also my problem with Superman.
I know.
It popped out.
You're right,
How dull is that blue? Like,
it's too dull, yeah.
Everybody has to look like Batman now.
I know. They just try to make... And that's kind of been Warner Brothers' thing, it seems,
for sure.
Like with the DC movies. They just try to make everything too dark, and they don't need to be
doing that. Like, I love The Dark Knight, but it ruined DC movies for going on a decade
now.
potentially, you know?
So, like, it reminds me of... thinking about that, I'm trying to remember... I can't remember his name. Jeff Wadlow. Okay. He's the director from Kick-Ass 2. He's the guy that's working on the new Masters of the Universe movie. When I talked to him in an interview on the Roast Google Dinner podcast not too long ago, we were talking about how he's going to, or like just kind of getting his thought process on redesigning these characters from Masters and bringing them into a movie. And he was talking about how it is something that you have to do. You have to kind of change their looks a little bit. You have to bring them into a movie world. It's just something that has to be done. They can't look exactly like they did in the cartoon or whatever. He goes, but there's a way to do it that's the right way. And his kind of explanation of it was, if you can redesign a character's costume and their look and everything, but you take that character and you squint your eyes... and you still see that character.
Yeah.
You see the colors. You see kind of the layout of the outfit by squinting your eyes. That's the proper way to redesign an existing character.
That's a cool way to look at
it. I thought that was a really, really awesome way to see that.
Yeah.
He goes, you know, because you can redesign these characters, but if you squint your eyes and you still see, like, you know, the brown and the silver and kind of the, you know, the orange tones and everything, that still looks like He-Man. You squint your eyes at Skeletor, you still see that purple and blue and the yellow face, that's still Skeletor to you, even if his outfit is different looking, you know?
Yeah.
That's kind of his thought process on redesigning these characters for a movie. That is not what happens with Aquaman here.
Or
Wonder Woman. Because you don't squint your eyes and see those superheroes. Instead, you see these dark, drab, you know...
Yep.
Like super badass versions of these characters who were supposed to be colorful and, you know, comic book characters.
You see Chick Batman.
Yeah.
And long haired fish guy Batman. And
fish guy Batman. I like it.
That was my take on the Aquaman thing, because I know zero about Aquaman other than even when I read comics. Like, and I talk about that with Thor. I read a lot of Marvel comics. And so sometimes Thor would pop up.
Yeah.
And so you get a little bit of exposure to Thor. I just didn't care about Thor, even one iota, until the movies came out.
Right.
You know, and then Hemsworth just sort of owned it. And Aquaman isn't even that. Like, I read a lot of DC also. I don't even remember Aquaman showing up in a story. I'm sure he did. That's just right. How little I cared, you know? So, you know, outside of Super Friends, I got no exposure to Aquaman. So there was not a... The release of this picture was sort of a no-win. It could have looked exactly like the Aquaman I'm used to, and I would have went, that looks ridiculous.
Right, exactly.
You know, they could have gone super hardcore like they did with this, and I just go, well, that doesn't really look like Aquaman, but whatever.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, like, and that's kind of how I am,
I've got too much vested interest in what they're doing with this movie to care about the part that I don't care about. Like, yeah. I'm not going to be super happy about something that doesn't drive happiness towards me. But I'm also not going to be upset about changes to something that I didn't know anything about in the first place.
Yeah.
You know?
I really want to see more color with it.
For sure.
And we always reference the Marvel movies and how great those look. And it's funny because
those look like the comic books.
Well, and that's funny. One of the funny things, too, is when Jeff Wadlow was talking about his whole philosophy, Iron Man was one of his big go-tos on that. Because he kept referencing, like, you know, in the comic books, Iron Man actually had, like, armor that looked more like a superhero suit, where it was like you could see the muscles and everything like that, and it wasn't really like a blocky, bulky armor like it is in the movies now. He goes, but they designed that in such a way where it still looks like Iron Man. It still has those signature red and gold colors there in the right places, so you can look at that and it doesn't throw you off. You just go, this is what movie Iron Man looks like, but he's still Iron Man.
Yeah.
So that was one of his kind of big go-tos.
And remember the marks that they went through in the first Iron Man. I mean, they did the original Iron Man.
Yeah, you know, they did.
Tin can stuff.
Yeah.
And they did the first build of the suit. And they made a point. It was almost a joke in the movie about getting the color.
Yeah.
In there,
yeah,
you know, but it's another thing that shows how, you know, they know the stuff that's actually important, and you don't want to focus on, well, I mean, the color's not what makes the movie. No, it's not, but it is a definite insight into the idea that the people who are making the movie respect and care about
right.
the transition, not just throwing a story up there, you know? And again, I just, God, I love Zack Snyder so much, but I don't think that they are making the movie that I want to see, or the universe, or whatever.
Yeah,
and I tend to think general consensus is probably going to land with me.
You know,
and
it's funny too because like
just
when that
make the comic books into movies.
Yeah, yeah. When that picture of Aquaman got released, I saw very kind of in the middle reactions to it. Like nobody was really going, this is amazing, I love this. But I did see people go, whoa, I wasn't expecting, you know, such a hardcore looking Aquaman. But I still saw many people like putting up pictures of Aquaman from the comics and pictures of Jason Momoa and going, Aquaman?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I saw that multiple times. Yeah. So there are definitely people out there who are thinking along the same lines as us with, you know, this kind of thing.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And again, he didn't like. I mean, like Jason Momoa looks in all of his movies, which is nothing like. What
I know.
I
kind
of
wish they would have at least given him the blonde hair or something.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care if it's long, but long and blonde. You know, like he had it in the comics.
Yeah.
It's weird that they're just like, just put him in this dark Aquaman costume. Aquaman, there he is.
Blonde,
they didn't really do anything.
Is a color.
Yeah,
we don't want that.
They don't want no colors.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. So it's interesting, though. It's cool to see that they actually are revealing some of the other characters that we're supposed to be seeing pop up. It'll still be interesting to see, like, how involved these characters actually are in this movie.
Yeah, which is, again, it's a point of excitement and a point of fear.
Yep, for sure.
Know? Yeah.
For sure. well, speaking of kind of dark and gritty stuff, here's another good transition for us.
You never got DuckTales now?
Yes, DuckTales now. No, we're going to save DuckTales. I want to talk just a little bit about that Power Rangers fan film that hit the net this last week. And I know that you don't really know a lot about Power Rangers.
Almost zero.
I know a little bit about Power Rangers because I watched the Mighty Morphin era. But it was one of those things like Power Rangers was much more of my brother's thing.
Yeah.
So I watched it with him, but once it got past like that first season, I moved on from it and he stuck with it because it was like his thing. So I'm only familiar with like that first era.
And same here, except I don't think I watched it as intently with you.
Yeah.
Because when it first came out, it was a big thing. I was just at the older cusp of watching stuff like religiously. So it came on, and I was still kind of watching stuff, so I caught it here and there. But every time I catch it, I'm like, man, the animated version, which is just Voltron,
is
far more my speed. I like it better. So I didn't. I never got into Power Rangers. And I remember, you know, when something you don't like gets really big, sometimes you start to dislike it just to dislike it, you know. So it was one of those things where, like, everybody's shoving Power Rangers down my throat. I'm like, oh, goodness,
guys.
It's fine, but I want to stop talking about it now. And I remember we won tickets to a special showing of that first movie.
Me too.
And I had to take my niece, which I thought was funny, too, because I was like, she's way too young for this, and I'm way too old for this, and neither of us are going to like this. And we went and watched it, and I actually really thoroughly enjoyed it.
I liked it, too.
I liked the movie. Yeah. I just never liked the show terribly much. But, like, I saw a lot of that stuff, and, man, that was so long ago, and I cared so little. I don't remember any of it. So this fan film, I'm sitting there watching it going, from a nostalgia perspective, I think this is cool, except I don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah. So the fan film, from my perspective, and I'm, like I said, I'm basing this all off of, like, the Mighty Morphin stuff and the stuff that I know, but that's what this fan film is. It's Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. Like, all the characters they reference are those characters. Vanderbeek was in it, which is awesome.
Yeah, that was cool.
So it's kind of cool to see
and
him
Katie
in there.
Sackhoff.
Yeah. So she played Kimberly.
Quote unquote.
I guess it's okay to spoil it now, because also, I guess we'll throw this out there, that fan film's gone now.
Is it already gone?
It's been pulled down.
Okay, because I just watched it like a day or two ago.
It's gone. Okay. It's been yanked down. Saban filed a copyright claim against it and got it yanked off YouTube. It got yanked off Vimeo. It's down. Now, I'm sure, since it's the internet, you can find it still, but you're not going to be able to go to YouTube and search for it. I mean, people will probably, like, keep trying to upload it.
Yeah.
It's going to keep getting pulled down, because Saban has put their foot down and said, nope, that's our property. You can't do it. So, So Kimberly and Vanderbeek plays Rocky, who was, like, the second Red Ranger. Because if you remember, he was actually the one that was in the movie that you saw, because Jason, Zach, and Trini were the original Red, Black, and Yellow Rangers. But they ended up leaving the show at one point, and they were replaced by Rocky, Aisha, and Adam. So those three were actually the ones in the movie that you saw. So he's playing Rocky, the second Red Ranger, who is apparently, like, defected to the villain side. And, like, I guess this takes place when they're now more adults.
Yeah.
And all hell has broken loose, and the villains are just, like, have destroyed the world.
Yeah, they kept calling them the machines.
The machines, they were, like, all robots, like the robot beasts or whatever. I don't know. Robeasts were actually Voltron. But that's... it was kind of crazy. So, like, the whole thing is just this dark and gritty, adult-themed Power Rangers world. I mean, there's murdering going on and all this bloodshed, and they're showing them as they're fighting people. They're just straight murdering them as they're fighting them. The version that wasn't on YouTube, there was a version on Vimeo or one of those sites. The scene with Zach actually had nudity in it, so it actually shows him with a bunch of naked girls in the bed.
Yeah.
So, like, they set out to make this just this crazy, over-the-top, adult, mature-themed Power Rangers.
Yeah.
So, looking at it from that aspect, cool, fine, I see what they're going for. I thought it was interesting, it was neat, the acting was cool in it, I like Vanderbeek a lot.
Yeah.
I thought the twist at the end was fun, even though I saw it coming. Like, I could tell where they were going with it, you know. It was interesting, but if we're talking about this, because I saw a lot of people, this is what brings this up. A lot of people were commenting, posting this, going, yeah, this is how you reboot Power Rangers. Yeah, this is amazing. And when I saw stuff like that, I was like, no, guys, no.
It's fun for what it is.
It's fun for what it is. It set out and accomplished exactly what it was meant to be, this crazy fan film that is meant to be over the top and adult that they probably knew was going to get pulled down anyway. They just did it for fun for whatever reason, and it accomplished its goal. If they were actually to come out and say, guys, we're doing a new Power Rangers movie, it's going to be crazy like this, I'd go, nope.
Yeah.
That's a bad idea.
Yeah.
Because this goes back to everything we always talk about on this show, where you can't abandon your source material and just make this crazy, dark, over-the-top, gritty, adult-themed Power Rangers show and get rid of everything that makes Power Rangers Power Rangers.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can't get rid of the fun and lighthearted nature of the show. Power Rangers has always been a huge kids brand. You can't exclude the kids from it. I don't care if you grew up with it too or not. It's just... You can't do that. There's no reason to do that.
At least not as like the as your main source stuff. And that's, again, I don't know the filmmakers or what they were going for, but I don't think they were trying to replace anything.
And I don't think so either.
Like you said, it was a 15-minute fan film.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm not.
Yeah, if nothing else, it's essentially a resume for whoever. Right. Look what I can do with no money. Yeah,
exactly.
And just my general knowledge of James Vanderbeek's phone number.
Right. Right. Yeah.
You know. Yeah. But. So it was super fun for what it was.
Right.
And even to somebody, like, it was one of those things where I watch it going, this is better than I think it is, because other people know what's happening, and they're really enjoying it, you know?
I thought it was kind of cool, but
yeah.
I don't know.
It
like
was very neat. But again, if like you said, if that was an actual, like, if that was a preview for a movie, I'd go, nope.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And here's the thing. It was fun for what it was, but it didn't feel like Power Rangers.
Yeah.
You know, like, there were very few scenes where it actually showed them with Power Rangers outfits on, and I wanted to see more of that.
Yeah.
Like, I felt myself craving actual Power Rangers in this, and there just weren't.
Yeah.
They were playing these characters who were, like, the alternate identities of the actual Rangers in the show, but we didn't actually get to see them be the Rangers, and I feel like that, you know, I wanted to see more of that. So, I don't know, like, they told this crazy story about what happened with these teenagers when they grew up, and I guess it was supposed to be like, because they kept talking about, like, why do you think they chose teenagers to do this?
Yeah, why do you think they had kids fighting their intergalactic war?
Yeah, kids fighting their intergalactic battles and this and that. And I was just like, I mean, I guess I see what you guys are going for, but
yeah. Well, and again, though, I mean, this wasn't like officially licensed.
Yeah.
Some guy who loved Power Rangers and had some time and some connection threw up. You know, a little fan movie. And I think that's what fan movies are supposed to be.
Exactly.
Fan movies are out there for that weird fringe stuff.
You're
right. Well, what if this?
This was exactly what a fan film is supposed to be. And I want to keep reiterating that I'm not actually, like, running down this film or saying I disliked it, because I did think it was good and it was fun.
Yeah. You're commenting on the comments.
Yes. Yeah. I'm just kind of distinguishing, you know, the difference between this actually being an awesome reboot idea and just being what it is.
Everybody
which is
who thinks
film.
They want to see 90 minutes of that is probably wrong.
Well, and I saw this, and I really wish I can remember where I saw it, so I can't even, like, tell you guys who wrote this article, but I saw an article that was talking about how Saban had it pulled off of YouTube. And the entire article was just, like, bashing Saban for this, because they were like, this is the first time that Power Rangers has probably been relevant in years and years and years. And I was like, well, now you sound like an idiot, because Power Rangers has never dropped in relevancy and is still very popular right now.
Yeah.
Go ask some kids that are outside. Yeah. They know exactly what's going on with it.
Yep.
So I don't know
if they have a TV show or where to find it, but I know they're still selling toys.
Absolutely. They still have a very, you know, TV show still does very well. I mean, that brand is one of those brands that has never gone away.
Yep.
It has always, it may not be as in your face as it was back in the Mighty Morphin days, but it is still successful enough that they pull in great ratings and they sell tons of toys.
There's nothing that makes me madder than reading, and I know it's the internet, but you go to legitimate sources still and you read. And I'm not going to start name dropping anything. I can't think of an example off the top of my head, but I know I read at least 5 of them a week.
Yeah.
Where you're reading something you know about from a legitimate, you know, respected quote unquote source, you know, and you get halfway through the article and you're like, does anybody fact check anything?
I know. And that's
ever. Does anyone fact check?
That's how I felt when I was reading this, because
now anybody can just be a writer. And by a writer, I mean, they can take whatever thought comes into their head and throw it on the internet.
Yeah.
Now it's published.
Yeah.
And half of it's wrong.
And that's how I felt when I was reading this. And like I said, I feel stupid that I can't even tell you guys who posted it. But I want to say it was like an actual website. It wasn't just some guy writing a blog. Like, this was an actual news story.
Yeah.
And the author of this post was saying things like, this was the first time Rangers has been relevant in all these years, and Saban is hurting themselves by having this film pulled down. Like, you're just not right about that.
Yeah.
And I mean, if they want to pull it down, they have every right to do it. Sure. Maybe they probably, I mean, I don't really, maybe they thought that it was doing harm to their brand. And it's kind of one of those things you have to look at from a corporate perspective, because they do own that property. They want to protect that property. They probably didn't want something out there super ultra violent that kids would find by mistake when doing a search for Power Rangers. So they have every right to pull it
down. For sure.
You know what I mean? It is
like
one
sad,
of the
sad, but
it is sad.
Yeah.
It is sad, but sometimes you have to play devil's advocate, look at it from both sides of the, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
I'm not for corporate censorship.
Yeah,
but I'm also not for kids finding stuff like that.
Right.
You know, like it was. I liked it. I thought it was super cool. And if there was a perfect answer to give it a venue to make sure everybody could see it, that's fine. If they didn't pull it, I'd have been fine with that. But I'm also, I'm okay with them.
Yeah,
it makes sense.
It got out there, and it's been seen, and the people that really want to see it still will find it
anyway.
Well,
and that's what I was
going
to say, like you said, and like, it'll be harder for kids to find now, but most people can still,
find
it.
Yeah,
if they need to.
So, like, I feel like they accomplished whatever goal they were trying to accomplish by putting this out there. I'm sure they feel fine about it. You know, I'm sure they feel like, well, job well done. The whole world just saw this. It made headlines this whole week. It was a, you know, big news story.
Yep.
Success.
Yep.
We did it. You know, that's, I'm sure that is all they were wanting.
Yeah,
I hope
so.
Yeah. So
I don't know how long that took, but cool. Good job, guys.
Yeah. It was definitely interesting, and it is always kind of cool to see stuff like that pop up from time to time.
Oh, for sure. And again, that's what fan films are perfect for.
Yeah.
Because I do like seeing
gets people discussing.
Yeah, like I don't want to see a big advertising campaign and 90 minutes of that movie, but it was super cool to see that little 15-minute take on it, you know.
Yeah.
It just pops up on the internet.
For sure.
You remember that this isn't the exact same thing because this was almost a continuation of that. But did you see a couple years ago that Thomas Jane, Punisher follow up?
How cool was that?
Yeah, awesome.
That was amazing.
Like, for no reason, whatever. I still have no idea why that's out there. But it's just because
they
I
just
think Thomas Jane loved Punisher.
Yeah,
he really wanted to do.
Yeah,
more of that. You know,
it was awesome.
Didn't work out,
and it was more Punisher than his movie was.
Yeah,
like that was what was cool about it. You know, but it was one of those things where they didn't like outright call him the Punisher, and they just kind of had the skull thing there to like so that you knew it was the Punisher.
Yeah,
so they found a way to like skirt around the Marvel stuff.
Yep.
But that's one of those things that Marvel probably looked at and went, "Okay, that's awesome.
Yeah,
we don't
exactly.
care. You know what I mean? that didn't
dirty,
do anything.
Dirty Laundry.
Dirty Laundry.
If you haven't seen it, go.
Yeah.
I think, and that's still I've watched that within a year ago, and I found
that,
it on YouTube. Typed it in, and there it was.
That probably didn't do anything to hurt Marvel's brand.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? They were like, okay.
Yeah, well done.
Good job,
Thomas
Jane.
Yeah. When it's not quite as violent as some of your movies of the same subject, it's not so big a deal.
I wonder
if
we'll see Punisher show up in the Marvel Universe at some point.
They've hinted at him, sort of, kind
I wouldn't
of,
be shocked.
In S.H.I.E.L.D., so he's in the
universe
again.
Oh, okay, yeah. That's
they
right.
Did,
They did tease that. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's talk about some really fun, like, lighthearted news now, because this is some really exciting stuff that's been popping up last
week.
Yeah,
I'm juiced.
It seems that we have a bit of an 80s cartoon revival on our hands in the coming years here.
Partially thanks to Netflix.
So we'll start with that. Revivals of Danger Mouse and Inspector Gadget are both set to arrive on Netflix. Looks like starting as early as spring 2016.
Yeah. I actually thought Inspector Gadget might be sometime this year, but
is
I don't
know. Oh, March 2015.
Yep,
that
yep.
is
wow, that's
this
right
month.
Now.
That is this month.
Is that right?
It just says right here. Premieres exclusively in the U.S. on Netflix this March and will join service later date in Latin America, UK, Ireland, France.
26 episodes?
26 episode series of Inspector Gadget.
That's
so that's
awesome.
Pretty sweet. They're doing the CG thing with that, so it's a CG series. But
I'll take it.
Yeah, man. I love the... That's cool.
Yep.
And then Danger Mouse is one that kind of feels like it comes out of nowhere. I remember watching a lot of Danger Mouse on Nickelodeon in the early days of Nickelodeon.
The early Nickelodeon days. I love Danger Mouse.
And that's one of those British shows, right?
Yeah.
Because that's where that came from. But yeah, he's basically like a British super spy kind of a character in the form of a mouse who has like a little hamster sidekick or whatever. Penfold, right? Yeah.
Yes. Yep.
His name was Penfold. And it's cool. Like looking at just the animation style for it, it's
yeah, that
I like
one
it.
Picture.
It looks
kind
of
looks cool.
It looks like an updated version of the original cartoon.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to see that.
I'm sad that I have to wait a year.
I know. Me too. But that's exciting. But you know what's even more exciting and what we have to wait even longer for?
Do know what's more exciting.
Oh my gosh. Disney has announced an all new DuckTales series. Coming to Disney XD in 2017.
Mind blown.
Oh my gosh. DuckTales was such an amazing cartoon.
I loved
it. And I think, you know, everybody that grew up with the Disney Afternoon stuff, gosh, and the amazing Nintendo video game. I mean, DuckTales.
God. And they just remastered
that. DuckTales has so many, like, great memories for all of us for, you know, great cartoon, awesome video game, and now it's coming back for a new generation to enjoy. Our freaking kids get to grow up watching DuckTales.
It's so funny, the timing on it, because again, I've been watching that new Turtles series with my three-year-old, and she loves it. But so there's been a couple of scenes, and I think they've all involved belching, where my wife walks into the room and just goes, "Something with princesses, please." Something. And so I start thinking, like, okay, I got to find something slightly more relatable to my female child that I can start watching and enjoying with her.
Maybe you should go, "Hey, wife, gender equality."
She's not one to go for that argument. That's not something she's not going to take that as, oh, okay, that means my
you
kid's
got
supposed
me.
To burp a lot.
That's not what it means?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
But I started thinking, I was like, you know what? The DuckTales, the old series, is on DVD. Maybe I should start snagging those, and I can watch it. It's not exactly a girl show, but it's not exactly a boy show.
Yeah,
that's
that was
right.
like
that's
an
middle,
everyone show.
That's middle ground. That might be perfect. Yeah. And then I hadn't been thinking that for, because we're not even finished with Turtles yet, you know?
Yeah.
So I hadn't been thinking that for a week, and then that news popped out. I'm like, new DuckTales. Now I got to go get the old ones, so
Man.
She knows what she's walking into.
I'm just excited. Like, just thinking about all the cool things. Like, you know, my son's going to grow up and get to watch DuckTales on TV.
Yep.
I get to take him to new Star Wars movies in the theater. Like,
yep.
There's some really exciting things.
Yep.
And that's Disney, too. Thanks, Disney. You're going to make my kid have a good childhood, I think.
Both of my kids will be old enough for me to take them to that first Infinity War movie.
Oh, wow.
By the time it comes out.
That's
crazy. Exciting.
Yeah. That's amazing to think that far in the future with these movies. Oh,
yeah.
My gosh. Oh, yeah, so it says the new series will star the same beloved characters as the old. Scrooge McDuck, Huey, Louie, and Dewey, Launchpad, Donald. I mean, that's amazing. Like, now, I wonder, I hope they get good voices for everything, because I know that the original voice actor who played Scrooge is really old now.
Yeah.
And he did reprise the role of Scrooge in that remastered DuckTales game, but you could tell he's really old.
Yeah.
Like, it sounds like he was...
Yeah.
Kinda,
I'm sure they can find
So I don't know if he would be able to be Scrooge in the new cartoon. But yeah, Disney's pretty good at getting... I mean, you watch Mickey Mouse Clubhouse right now, and all of the voice actors who are Mickey and Minnie and Goofy still sound like Mickey, Minnie, and Goofy.
Yeah.
So I think Disney's pretty good.
Yeah,
like,
and you might be able to pick up... I'm still... Again, I keep going back to the Turtles, because that's what they were in the middle of watching, but I'm still... reeling from being on season 3 now, and all of a sudden Leonardo went from Jason Biggs to Seth.
Oh, how weird is that? That is
like,
so jarring.
It's not bad, but it is, like,
different.
Every time he talks, it's like, oh, okay. I gotta get used to that still.
Takes you a little while. It took me several episodes to, like... And, like, it's still one of those things, like, every time he talks, my wife still goes, ugh. Like, she still doesn't like it.
Well, it's funny, because I like Seth Green so much more than I like Jason Biggs.
Oh, and see, and I like Seth Green, too.
Yeah.
But, yeah, Jason Biggs really just kind of established a Leonardo
voice,
and Seth Green just sounds so different.
Yeah.
You know, and he's not doing a bad job, it's just a very different sounding Leonardo.
Yeah.
So you just have to get used to it. I mean, but the quality of the show has not changed.
No,
so
not at all.
It's
not
easy
at all.
To look past and keep going, you know?
Yeah.
There was that sound-alike Leonardo there for a while, too. Did you notice that? There were a couple episodes
at
the end of that season where it wasn't Jason Biggs and it wasn't Seth Green yet.
Yes, I did notice that.
That was a fill-in that
they
had, because Biggs had already, like, left the show for whatever reason.
Okay.
So he, like, left right at the end of that season. I still don't know exactly what happened. I don't know if he left or if he was forced out, but either way, yeah, they had, like, that sound-alike, and then, the sound-alike was pretty good, and then Seth Green was very different.
Yeah.
So it was like, I wonder how they, like... came to, like, choosing Seth Green for this role, because it's just so different than what they've had. But I like all the voices on there.
Well, knowing him, he probably called him and went, "I love your show."
Yeah, I like all the voices on the show, and I think it's awesome, and I'm excited to watch more Turtles. But I'm excited about DuckTales. I'm excited about Inspector
Gadget.
DuckTales
is going to be awesome.
Danger Mouse,
I'm
excited to check out. I think it's going to be some really, really fun stuff.
Danger Mouse is a weird, kind of out of left field. Like, I'm super excited for it, because I used to love it. But, like you said, it was kind of one of those, like, that's one of those shows that I always used to watch, and I was never sure if anybody else knew what in the world I was talking about.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
But, you know what? I feel like the whole world feels like that, because it caught everybody off guard, but everybody's going, oh!
Yeah.
Danger Mouse! You know? Like, everybody's excited about it seems like.
The show we all loved and never talked about.
Yeah, right? Well, I think it's, like, one of those things that we for sure probably all watched it when Nickelodeon just started out, because it was, like, one of their very first, like...
Something they could afford.
Yeah, that they brought on.
Yeah.
So we all have those memories of, like, turning on early Nickelodeon and catching Danger Mouse, and now all of a sudden he's coming back, so it's, like, refreshing all of our memories.
Yep, so now if Netflix could just give us some brand new episodes of Family Double Dare.
Come on. Netflix is so awesome.
I love them.
Oh, my God, they're doing good stuff.
I love them.
Very cool. All right, well, I think that's as good a place as any to wrap things up this week.
Yeah, you ain't getting better than DuckTales. We might have to call it a day.
Definitely not. No better than DuckTales. Woo! All right, guys. Well, hey, as I said at the beginning of the show, all that Toy Fair coverage is up there. I'm going to plug it this one more time, and then you don't have to hear me talk about it anymore until next year's Toy Fair. So head on over to YouTube, search for Pixel Dan, and also search for Toyak. Subscribe to both of those channels and check out all of that content. I would very, very much appreciate it.
And all my Oscar content is finally uploaded to the internet. It's all about an hour ago on this podcast. That's it.
There you go. So find it all on the GeekEasy podcast.
If you got any questions, comments, concerns, I don't know what you'd be concerned about.
Yeah.
But if you got any follow-ups to anything, any of the movies I talked about, or if you want more of an in-depth review on anything, feel free to leave us an email.
Yeah.
Or, you know, find me on Twitter, at JLeonard31, any of that stuff. If you start the conversation, I'll be happy to jump into it, you know. So if you want to know more about any of that stuff or more of my takes or give me your opinions on some of those. Did you guys also love Whiplash?
Yeah.
You know, any of that stuff, let me know.
Very cool, yeah. And you can find me on Twitter as well, at PixelDan. So follow both of us there. Feel free to chat with us about the show. And if any cool questions or interesting topics come up in your comments, we'll be happy to bring those up on a future episode of the show and discuss it. That'd be really cool. Also, if you are enjoying this podcast and you're not already, please be sure to subscribe to us. You can find us on iTunes. You can find us on Stitcher if you're an Android user. We're also on Podbean, which you can search on the internet. So whatever your desired method of listening to podcasts is, we would appreciate a subscribe and a review and a rating and whatever you want to do on any of those platforms. We don't care. Just help us out by subscribing and spreading the word of the show. So until the next time we meet, I am Pixel Dan.
I'm Jonathan Leonard.
Take care, everybody.
Life is like